The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome back, TNT. Already the phone lines are on the buzz, but let's first introduce Mr. Kemuel Pascal, former youth parliamentarian to Freedom 106.5 FM. Good morning to you, sir, and sorry that we had to bring it in so early this morning, but welcome to Freedom once again. How are you?
Thank you so very much. Good morning to you and good morning to all your listeners across Trinidad and Tobago and the globe.
So tell me, first of all, how did you manage to get into this politics? I mean, not many young people are interested in being that part of TNT's culture. What make you decide to get into it?
So firstly, I would have always been interested in politics, mm-hmm. Not necessarily frontline or representational politics, but just having a say, being able to lift my voice on issues and stuff. And so I would have firstly participated in National Youth Parliament back in 2018. Mm-hmm. I would have gone on to represent Trinidad and Tobago in 2019 at the Regional Youth Parliament, which was held in Trinidad and Tobago that year. Since then, I've done another youth parliament in January 2021, mm-hmm. And I have done virtual Commonwealth Youth Parliament, and most recently, last September, I would have represented Trinidad and Tobago in New Zealand at the 12th Commonwealth Youth Parliament.
So what is it like going to these conferences as opposed to TNT's way of and style of doing politics? Do you have any good points to give to our leaders, you know, like the do's and don'ts?
Some of the do's and don'ts, I would say, one of the things that I recognize about politicians internationally, mm-hmm. Is that they are much more relatable and kind of humble, as opposed to when there's youth parliament here in Trinidad and Tobago. Politicians kind of are a little bit far from us, even mm-hmm. though some of them assist in the training sessions and stuff. But my experience in New Zealand in particular would have shown me that politicians are human beings like us, mm-hmm. and we literally had politicians walking alongside us, talking alongside us. And to me, that was one of the most things that I always take away from interacting with politicians at those conferences and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And seeing as we just stepped out of what a lot of people have been calling the mother of all elections and the turning point, what was your experience like as a youth representative seeing probably some of the telltale signs come to the fore? What was your experience watching the 2025 election?
Sure. So as a person, you know, paying attention to all things, I would have been looking at things from the very start of things, which started kind of last year. Mm-hmm. Firstly, when the PNM postponed in the first instance their internal election. So to me, that kind of began things where the election is concerned. And then coming over into 2025, when Dr. Rowley would have mentioned that he is no longer running in this election. And mm-hmm. so that would have kind of caused the other parties to realize, oh, we have elections coming up. Yes, we know it's constitutional due in 2025, but I think in terms of like expecting, people kind of didn't expect it to be so soon.
Yeah.
Based on all the signs that we were getting. But I think this was one of the most interesting elections on both sides, both major parties, in terms of the campaigns that they ran and the way in which they tried to tailor their campaigns from the music all the way to the rally speeches and all of that. So mm-hmm. it was one of the quite interesting campaign, very, very short, 6 weeks, the minimum period for an election campaign.
And from the youth perspective, I know that we're still, from the morning show, the situation with the Commissioner of Police did go into referendums and constitutional reform. And so today we're talking about that constitutional reform from the youth perspective. Do you think even more now that that is something that should be paid attention to by the new government?
Yes, most definitely. Because a lot of the appointments that we see to high offices in Trinidad and Tobago is by way of the constitution mm-hmm. and what we have inherited from many, many years ago. And I do think that it's time, and it's a perfect segue to bring us into the segment, and I do think that it's time that we begin to look closer at our constitution, especially where the appointment of certain office holders mm-hmm. is concerned.
Now, as it stands, due to the constitution, do you have any points on how these state bodies or state positions are voted on and, how to put it, put into place?
Well, for instance, if you look at the president is appointed by an electoral college, which is made up of members of the
House and Senate.
House and Senate. Mm-hmm. And so we as the people, we don't necessarily get a say on that. Mm-hmm. It's that whomever's in government at the time, they propose someone, the opposition may or may not propose someone, as we saw in 2023, where Mrs. Christine Kangaloo, Christine Kangaloo, would have been appointed. The opposition proposed Mr. Israel Khan, senior counselor at that time. And so we as the people, we didn't have any say in that. It's that they wanted to, that particular person, and that's mm-hmm. the way it went. And so I think things like that, bodies like that, the president, for instance, we need to look at, for example, senators. The government has the opportunity to appoint 16 government senators, whereas the president has the opportunity to appoint 9 independent senators, and the opposition has the opposition leader has the opportunity to appoint 6 opposition senators.
Mm-hmm.
That's on their own volition, but we don't vote in persons in the Senate. They can virtually put anybody who they like. And as much as it is spelled out that in the selection of independent senators, the president would look at people from a wide cross-section of sectors and industries, we still don't have a whole lot of say in the persons who represent us from an independent, quote-unquote, standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Now, understanding that process, and the word referendum has been bandied about quite a bit. First of all, let's discuss what a referendum is, mm-hmm. and how do the public play into that?
Sure. So, generally, a referendum is a vote by the general electorate on a single political question to kind of get an idea as to what the country thinks the government, the direction rather, the government should go on the particular issue. And so we've seen referendums in different Caribbean islands. Most recently, I can remember Cayman Islands having referendum. We had Antigua and Barbuda at one point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are countries that have had referendums within recent years to get an idea as to the directions that they should go on certain issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in our law, we don't have that power right now. So that's something that we could potentially look at, because it would not just give the government a mandate by the people, but it will give them a very, very clear direction as to where they should go on any singular issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, the most recent example of a referendum was Venezuela.
Right.
And the movement of certain choices by the president, Maduro, and the people came out and said, well, no, we don't want this. Yes, we want that. And they came out in their numbers and voted on that referendum. The query is now that those referendums were not adhered to by the president, and there's a whole conflict. How do we ensure, even if we put in that clause into the Constitution, that the voice of the people is adhered to? Is there a fail-safe within a referendum?
I think that there should be one, simply because if you are asking the population for a mandate on any particular issue,
mm-hmm.
then it means to say that the voice of the people must be respected. It's the same way when you have a general election. If a particular party or parties are elected, we respect that choice and we move forward. We don't, if yes, there are opportunities to contest or ask for recounts or whatever the case, but if you are asking for the population to say, yes, we want this, or no, we don't feel the same way about this, then it means that you must respect the voice of the people.
Mm-hmm.
So there must be some sort of clause in there that says that these principles must be adhered to once voted upon by the people.
And if not, would it be something like a revote, or going back to an election to re-choose the representative, if it is that the choice of the people have not been met?
In terms of like, or
if it is that, let's say, for example, let's take the case of the police commissioner in Trinidad and Tobago. The commissioner of police is appointed by the Police Service Commission,
mm-hmm.
but the selection process is subject to parliamentary approval. The PSC nominates candidates and the president issues a notification. The House of Representatives then needs to approve the notification before the PSC can formally make the appointment. Now, it's one thing that these individuals, who I would believe have all of the records of the individuals, their performance, etc., they would be able to refer to that. And if the people gave a referendum on that, they gave their own vote on it, then they would have both the public and the Police Service Commission to, you know, choose the best person. Now, if it is that it goes against what the people want, then it would give a space to revote or have another count or have another discussion on who should be chosen. So it gives the opportunity for, as we were saying before, the voice of the people to have a say or a participate within the process. Now, constitutional reform would be the process by which these things can be added to the process. So we will go further into that. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, your calls and, of course, your questions at 306-1065. Do you think these changes are necessary or how would it change the process? All of that and more coming up.
That email seems suspicious, and that SMS could be vicious. That phone call or voice note's too serious, too good to be true, probably fictitious. Don't be fooled by online imposters, promise things that are gonna cost ya. Be aware, protect your data and money, stay aware, stay alert, stay secure.
You can outsmart the scammers. A message from Republic Bank. Report any suspicious activity to customercare@rfhl.com.
Spellbound!
A spelling-based game for school children 10 years and under.
Keep an eye on the clock.
And this is the Spellbound Wheel.
Plus,
your hive of 5 and 35 is...
And featuring your boy, Kirst the Illusionist.
It's on Mondays at 8.
Streaming live on Facebook and at cnc3.co.tt.
Reruns on Wednesdays at 4:25 p.m. and on Saturdays at 5 p.m. on CNC3.
Brought to you by the Ministry of Planning and Development, Parrier Fuel Trading Company Limited, with Oxytos Plus, and thebesttoys.com.
This is The Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. Speak your mind.
Welcome back, TNT. So the question today, as we speak with Mr. Pascal today, as you are now joining us here at Freedom 106.5 FM, let me let you in on who this young gentleman is. Kemuel Pascal is a former youth parliamentarian, and he is here to discuss the youth perspective on reform, constitutional reform, what referendums are, and how, you know, the process would be attempting that change. So let's take a call first, 625-2257. Let's see what your question is. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Pascal.
Good morning and welcome.
Well, and I welcome to your guest there as well, former youth parliamentarian.
Yes, he is.
All right, Mr. Pascal, I take great interest in the fact that as a youth representative, that you are really looking at the future of our country and how you can put a very important input into bringing some sanity to what is currently taking place in our nation. Hopefully, you will be one of the persons sitting in Parliament to engineer such changes. In terms of the referendum, which has been something that has been in the public domain for the longest while, which require constitutional reform, right? In terms of the referendum, how confident are you that given the history of our country and the politics, that such a thing will be included in our constitution so that they can give the citizens of this country power to make decisions in our affairs?
Interesting question. Thank you so much for that.
Well, caller, good morning again to you. One of the things that one of the challenges to the reform process obviously is lack of political will, and obviously there is when you look at the support in Parliament, because obviously to make changes to the Constitution, once it affects your human rights and stuff as enshrined in the Constitution, there needs to be the support of both sides of the House. And so that's one of the major challenges. And so over the years, what we've had is that governments set up committees, they appoint persons to chair these committees, and they simply don't do anything to those reports that are produced. So one of the major issues is obviously the lack of political will.
And talking about political will, how do you foster that in your representatives? I mean, they say it's who you choose from your councillor to your MP, etc. But it's one thing to have something presented to you and you believe, okay, this person is really for the people. And then you realize, well, maybe the resistance is what I'm getting at. How do we tackle that resistance?
So you're looking at public distrust right there. Because sometimes the representative may propose stuff where the constitution is concerned, reforming the constitution, but people may be against it. So that's another challenge to the reform process. But more specifically on the side of representatives and how we elect them, all that is contained in the constitution, and so those are things that we may possibly need to look at in terms of reforming. Most recently back in, I think it would have been back in 2013, if I'm not mistaken, the then government would have attempted, 2014, sorry, the Constitutional Reform Bill, which would have introduced two-term limits for prime ministers, things like runoff voting systems. But that bill eventually, well, faced criticisms and did not become law. So that's one of these things that we could look at when you look at constitutional reform.
And I'm sure that the caller, there's one specific caller who calls in and talks about limited terms or limited time for each representative, the number of consecutive years that a representative can go up for election, all of these things. Let's take another call, 625-2257, 627-3223. Hello, good morning.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
I am blessed. How are you?
Very good, Krishna. I'm belonging to coordinate with a youth parliamentarian. And why is all of them going to talk about constitutional reform? I want to hear his opinion of the parliament there. And briefly, it's supposed to be discussing the business of the people, where intelligent people get together and trash out the debate. But at the end of the debate, invariably, 100% of the time, people who agree belong to one political party, and people who disagree belong to the other. You know? And the children, the youth, to get into the system that absolutely makes no sense. I don't know how people could leave the home every day, go in parliament, and know that the decisions of a vote is already decided. So what he's trying to do now with constitutional reform is like putting new wine into our own dirty bottle. Parliament doesn't make no sense. They simply could have a vote of conscience when they're discussing if they're serious about addressing the people's problems. It don't have to be at the end of the day. Everybody who agreed belong to one party. And I don't know how people over the century, over the decades, go to parliament every year after year, and they come up with this nonsense that they go to do on me. I know we tend to talk about constitutional reform. It's like not a repeat.
Are you suggesting that it may be a waste of time?
You couldn't have said it more than that.
Well,
they congratulate the new people, the youths. Oh, you're something like a talented man. Be this. I'm going to listen to him. Tell him what I'm talking. Disrespect him. And the game master, the end of the day, will be evaluating him. Oh, you sound like a talented
man. Thanks so much for your call. Now, the thing is, within a process like this, there will be comments like that, you know, because you are in essence challenging the way things are.
Status quo.
Yes. And sometimes the resistance is because there is a working that people are accustomed to.
Yes.
Whether it is right or wrong is debatable still. However, the challenge, I think that's the resistance we're talking about.
Yeah, that's the resistance we are speaking about. Remember, systems work for people.
Mm-hmm.
So if a system is working for you, sometimes say, why fix it if it isn't broken? So for example, when you look at the appointment of a speaker, that's chosen by the members of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And in most cases, it's supposed to be somebody who is independent because
yeah.
they are to preside over the sittings of parliament in an independent manner. But what we see is simply not that.
Mm-hmm.
When a government chooses a speaker, that speaker is most times probably someone who would have been in the bowels of that particular party for many years, probably just behind the scenes. And so their rulings are often biased towards the
one or not.
Yeah.
Now, so, I think to give credit though, mm-hmm. in the beginning, I'm thinking the trust that people had in the system many years ago lended to integrity and for persons to be, just as you describe, mm-hmm. impartial and able to preside over a sitting for the betterment of the country rather than betterment for one party or yes. individual. As times have changed, we're seeing examples blatantly sometimes that right. it may favor one party over another. In modern times now, seeing as youth mm-hmm. and many other people have the platforms available now to express even further than just the papers and word of mouth, they are requesting or even elevating to the levels where we need to go back to the levels of integrity that we depended on in our leaders. So how do we really task the ones who are in charge of the governance of the country to really pay attention to constitutional reform?
Well, as I mentioned before, systems work for people because it works in their favor. And so they are often wanting to speak about in the public for people to hear because it sounds good, mm-hmm. but actually carrying it out, which is the political will to do it, they simply don't have. And so it's important that we continue to speak about it, because if we just sit by, then nothing will happen. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we continue to speak about it, we continue to give suggestions and stuff, because people often ask us, and what the caller alluded to it before, why speak about it when you simply don't, you know, you're not going to get the traction. But as I said, as I'm saying, it's important that we speak about and continue to lift those issues. Not because we are shut down and oftentimes means that we will just leave it alone. No, but mm-hmm. it can't be that.
I have some comments coming in here. Tuska Curup here. To your guest, I am suggesting that the Independent Senate should be reformatted to have 50% being individuals between the ages of 18 to 25 to have opinions at that level be of the youth, for the youth and by the youth, free from any political party constraints. Interesting suggestion.
Yes. Well, I know a couple of years ago, Barbados tried to amend their laws to have senators be appointed from the age of 18, mm-hmm. and that was not supported there. Currently, in the Trinidad Tobago context, once you are 25 and over, you can be appointed a senator to the Senate.
And Helon
France
was one of Helon Francis was one of those who a young person.
Yes. Before that, you had Nikolai Edwards a couple of years ago,
mm-hmm.
Serving as an independent senator as well.
Let's hear this voice note coming in at 3061065 as you continue to contribute to the conversation. This is one of the messages. Good morning.
Yes, Mr. Gordon. I want to agree with you on that. You will return back to your...
That was one from Davey here. This is our own. Good morning.
The Electoral College have the sole responsibility in terms of selecting a president. The Senate has absolutely no part to play in that.
Now, the Electoral College, it always seems to be this very secret organization. You never know who is part of it. Do you think that maybe we should be alerted to who is part of that Electoral College? Would that help with the choice?
Well, from what I know, it's often a public vote, from what I remember, mm-hmm. from the last time around, back in January 2023, when they would have been selected Mrs. Christine Kangalo. So it's aired live on
the Parliament channel.
Yes, on the Parliament channel. So mm-hmm.
The thing is, what I'm recognizing too, it's information that should be available to the public, but also public interest. Are the members of the public really interested in the functions of the government and the different procedures that exist members that we are speaking of? Let's take another message at 3061065. Good morning.
Tuska, constitutional reform is a must for Trinidad and Tobago. I remember in the days of the NRA, I went to the Hall of Justice and they had a book that was given out to the public, Mark, Thinking Things Over. All right, it's a must for Trinidad and Tobago. And when you have the majority, it is the time to implement these things. Okay? Mm. You can't force somebody getting 91,000 or 150,000 votes and they have no voice or no say in the parliament of this country. The laws must be changed and implemented right away.
Thank you so much for your contribution and what you have to say on that.
Yeah, he's absolutely correct. Because of how our system is structured, you can be elected with how many of a thousands of votes, but your voice still doesn't make a difference in Trinidad and Tobago because of how the executive is structured, mm-hmm. and the powers that the executive, being the government, they have in the way of distribution of funds and projects that they do and that kind of thing. Because oftentimes you see when a government is in power, the constituencies, the opposition constituencies, are not really given the attention that
they're needed.
That's needed. Mm-hmm. And similarly, when
vice versa.
Yes.
Now, that goes to proportional representation. I think that's the term that they've been bandying about for a long time. We were very close to finding a formula when we decided to discuss local government reform.
Yes.
And then that was put on the shelf. There was, I believe, a report done on
that.
There
was a report. The law was changed. Mm-hmm. But I think because they didn't have the majority, PNM government that would have been, didn't have the majority to do everything that they wanted to do. It was challenged, went all the way to the Privy Council.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we had the elections being called in 2023. So whereas the law that they amended would have meant that it was due in 2024,
mm-hmm.
which would have begun the term limit of 4 years, sort of taken us to 2028, Privy Council had ruled that they needed to call the elections. That would have been sometime in early 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And we had elections in what, if not July, I think July, if I'm not mistaken.
And that was a whole mess as well.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what's happening with that.
The thing is, I feel almost like the country would need to shut down completely for all of these laws to be looked at. And then almost like a restart and a, you know, like a wind-up toy.
Yeah.
And figure out exactly which ones of these laws need to be, and I don't even think it's so much changed, but updated.
Yes.
You know, I think, Dave, you mentioned some law the other day that applied to a crime that was, it was applied in 1937. Yeah, 1937. And the punishment for that crime was laughable.
Yeah.
You know, in this modern day time, taking away 2 years, some kind of nonsense
like
that.
There definitely needs to be a revision of the laws in Trinidad and Tobago and an updating of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Law Reform Commission is partly responsible for doing those things. But most often what happens is that we produce reports, we have committees do reports and stuff.
Spend so much money. Yeah.
We have commissions of inquiries and nothing happens with them.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happens. Because if you look at past efforts towards constitutional reform, in 1990 you had the Hayat Ali Commission, 2006 you had the Constitution Reform Forum, 2013 you had the Constitution Reform Commission, which was chaired by Professor Hamid Ghani, that led to the Constitutional Reform Bill, which didn't gain any traction. And then last year, most recently, you had, after Mr. Pandey died, the Prime Minister, then Dr. Rowley, would have formed a committee called the National Advisory Committee on Constitutional Reform. And they would have produced a report and presented it to the Prime Minister on August 2nd, 2024. And that report was titled, We the People. And mm-hmm. since then, we haven't heard a whole lot about what would be coming out of that. I mean, the report is there for people to read. You can access it online. But you haven't seen any changes towards actually implementing some of the things that were contained in that report.
I know that within the campaign for 2025, a lot of mention was placed on constitutional reform. Do you think that that was just like a siren call?
Yeah.
Do you think that would be... I would think that would be one of the points directed or immediately needs to be taken on.
Well, politicians say what you say. They say things that you want to hear, you know. So that's literally what it was. They were saying things that they knew that the electorate wants to hear, if I may put it like that. But carrying out those ideas that they would have mentioned, really and truly, we may not see them anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at things like financing, campaign finance reform, there was a bill laid as far back as June 2015. No, 2020, sorry, by Dr. Rowley. And that hasn't gained any traction. That's before Joint Select Committee. Nothing has happened with that since. So you have all these things, all these committees being set up, nothing. All these reports being produced, nothing.
And the amount of money spent.
The amount of money being spent.
Putting these reports together.
Yes.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Hey, Josh, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Malabar here.
Hey, Malabar.
Yes, sir. I am totally
enjoying this conversation. And we need more of these kind of topics and discussion areas, because Trinidad and Tobago need to be reformed holistically. The whole of Trinidad and Tobago, we need reform in Trinidad's mentality.
Caller, can you step away from, yeah, from your... Yeah, just yeah, a little bit. Yeah, much better. Yes.
Right. So we need reform of our mentality, everything in our country here, Tusker.
Mm-hmm.
But I listened to our caller calling, we are talking about, you know, persons voting for the party and the... But I just want them to know that our parliamentary system is fashioned after the Westminster system model, right? And this two-line policy is fundamental under this model. The whip commands party loyalty, so voting along party lines is par for the course, right? Can we change that? Then we'll have to change the model, right? What concerns me is why would the architect of our constitution create a constitution that gives one man so much power? Why does the cabinet have so much power and the citizens have so little? These are questions that concern me, right? So I refer to our constitution as a democratic dictatorship constitution, because it really doesn't give the citizens much power except in decision-making where government, where change of government is concerned, right? Right? Why haven't we engaged in constitutional reform to include things like the right to recall? The right to recall is important, because we cannot continue to elect public officers to sit in high office to represent our constituencies and the citizens of this country, and they continue to fail us. There must be a measuring stick whereby you will be able to measure your performance, and the citizens recall the right to recall you, and you step out of office, right? This is what our constitution needs. So I want to know his thoughts, and even campaign finance reform. This is another thing that we need drastically to change in this country. We need campaign finance reform so that we will not have this sort of bubble taking place in our government. Thank you so much. In our politics, I should say. Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you so much for your call. Now, he brought up some salient points that have been discussed over and over again, especially over the campaign season. Mm-hmm. And as you said, these are the siren calls for the population, yes, to vote. You know, yes, we're going to look at this, we're going to look at that, especially with campaign finance reform, limit to terms for representatives, the right to recall representatives as well if it is representation is not up to the standard, mm-hmm, that you quote-unquote promised.
Yes.
Now, one of the more important points I think that we need to discuss as well is the Westminster way of doing things. We've in a way moved away from the Privy Council by introducing the Caribbean Court of Justice, but somehow we seem to still refer to the Privy Council. How can we change that? What are the things that are necessary to, you know,
constitutional amendments? It comes right back to that. And all has to do with it requires the support of both sides of the house,
mm-hmm,
not just the members of the government. And so I know the previous PNM administration, they would have mentioned doing it, but I can't recall them actually bringing the bill to the parliament for it to actually be done and see that the opposition will or will not support,
mm-hmm,
it. And so it's always been spoken about. It was a lobbied for the Caribbean Court of Justice to be headquartered here in Trinidad and Tobago, right there.
I remember that, yes.
Yeah. And so out of that, after we lobbied for it to be located here, we are still not signed on to it. We still have to go to the Privy Council. In fact, we have to get a visa to go to the UK now. So that's a whole other thing by itself. So imagine to get justice, if I may put it like that, the highest form of justice that's according to our laws,
mm-hmm,
you have to get a visa to
attend. And even that is now a complicated process.
Yeah. So, I mean, it all comes back to reform, mm-hmm, and amendment of our constitution.
And I guess more than anything, to step away from the Westminster way of thinking. I mean, the lawyers, and they still dress with the wigs and stuff, going to...
Yes, that's correct.
Our normal.
Even right here in the region, there are countries where the lawyers still,
mm-hmm,
utilize the big wigs as they possess.
The big wigs. Let's go back to the telephone lines. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Tosca, and good morning to your guest.
Good morning.
Princess Tong. very important topic. And Mr. Oscar, I have always advocated that if we talk about Trinidad and Tobago being this multi everything, multi ethnic, multi interest, and all of that, it is important that we establish institutions that reflect and accommodate that multiplicity or multi interest, etc. And that is why the parliament itself is in terms of the first past the post and what we have now is very unfair, is very unjust to when you think about in past elections, the ONR, the COP and so on, who got substantial amount of votes and yet no representation in parliament. So proportional representation, I feel it is absolutely necessary to make the various interest groups in the country feel, or not only feel, but give them a legal chance to exercise that democratic right and to be able to have their votes valued in the sense that it will matter in the final analysis. And that is something I would want to encourage the government going forward. We must have constitutional reform, and we have no excuse now. We have the numbers. Tobago have their two representatives in the parliament. So everything is in place in terms of the numbers. The population has been crying out for this, well, for years and years now. Mm-hmm. So this is, I think this will serve the nation well in terms of making the adjustments. I mean, you have referendum and so many other things that we have been hearing over and over that is absolutely necessary. One of the points I want to throw out for conversation is that our parliamentary, our MP offices, the MP office, is an extension of the parliament, because the parliament pays for the rental and the staff, everything in the MP's office. I am saying that in the reform, MP should be required by law to have at least quarterly meetings with their constituents. Quarterly meetings. And so they can report and they can have consultation and et cetera. And that process will be ongoing. Secondly, the even the staff at the MP's office, I think there should be some check and balance in place to ensure that our politicians do not only employ, you know, friends, family, and so on, but basic requirements. Because if you're going to have a field officer, if you are going to have a research officer and whatever officers they have there, you want to ensure that basic competencies and so on are catered for, so that in the final analysis, the constituents will be able to receive and get that professional prompt and efficient service. And that is something I feel the parliament should. I know right now is not like that, but that is something we should have some check and balance in place as part of the whole constitutional reform process. Because it doesn't make sense you spend, large sums of money and then what the constituents receive in terms of the quality
of representation.
So right now, Mr. Oscar, councillors are provided with office. They have a secretary and I think they get a small allowance for stationery and telephone and so on. But the question is, how many residents or persons even know where the councillor office is? How many of them visit?
And you're bringing up a valid point as well. How many people in the country are really interested in how their constituency functions? And what are the things that your councillor or the constituency is supposed to provide for the area? Because we would see examples of it, for example, when, okay, rainy season is upon us, or coming to, and then if it floods out, then you see the councillors coming out. Hamper for you, I got a hamper.
Reactive, yes.
Reactive rather than proactive.
That's the point. But you see, that these issues, Ms. Tosca, can be, that is where the political parties and even, well, media and everybody else, we should have a political education even in our school, as part of the school curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So a child in school will know what is the role of a councillor. What is the role of a member of parliament? What is the role of the parliament itself? Even the regional corporations. These are basic things that should be taught in our schools. And I mean, and you have NGOs and CBOs who should all be part of the process, so that a citizen, a teenager, for example, should be aware of these things to know how can I work the system with my councillor or even village council. What is the role of village council in the context of community development? All that should be part of the whole constitutional reform process and whatever is to happen in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, there's that feeling of disconnection. There's a disconnection in the society because people don't know one, and then people feel that it's a kind of hopeless situation. So this is where we have to educate and get these systems up and running so citizens will understand, appreciate the value, and we can work with the process and the systems to get that dialogue and conversation and get things running.
Thanks so much for your call.
Even the MPs and so on should have educational programs to go there, outreach and talk to people, educate people. Mm-hmm. Because there's a serious disconnect. If you ask a lot of people, they don't even know who the MP is. Yeah. They don't know where the office is. And basic things like they don't know what is the office number. And when they have a problem, they expect a magic.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Ms. Stone.
Thank you so much, Princess Stone. Now, he brought up some very salient points. Coming straight from town meetings to understanding the budgets and the functions of their representative to when there are disasters in these areas, how the response to those disasters as well is another scenario that we need to pay attention to.
Yes. So you brought up a lot of stuff in terms of quarterly town hall meetings.
Yeah.
For instance, there are countries by law that you are mandated as an elected representative to have meetings with your constituency, persons within your constituency on a quarterly basis. Another thing that I've always spoken about, and was spoken about during the People's Partnership Government, is a constituency development fund. And so that fund is meant to really and truly channel resources into the constituency itself. And he mentioned NGOs, for NGOs in particular, or to carry out certain programs or whatever that the central government may not be doing. But you as the MP, along with your staff, can now put on those programs utilizing resources that you have right within your constituency.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that was spoken about, but it was never really implemented in the real way that it really should be implemented in. And so that's another thing that kind of needs to be looked at, because that would now allow central government, yes, would still have their part to do,
mm-hmm.
but it would now allow constituencies actually be able to do it on their own. We don't
autonomy.
Always have
to,
yes,
mm-hmm.
have some level of autonomy. Then another thing that I've always looked at, or spoken about rather, is this thing about having a day in parliament where you can debate issues specific to your constituencies.
Mm.
Because save and apart from members of parliament being able to write to a minister or write to the prime minister to say there's this constituent who may need a house,
mm-hmm.
Or may need a food card, or I recommend this person for this, there really isn't, other than motion to move the adjournment of the house, which is often brought by the opposition, or matters on the adjournment of the house, which happens when the sitting is ended. Once the business of the government has ended for the day, the next thing on the order paper would be that the opposition has the ability to raise a matter or a motion on the adjournment for the adjournment of the house on a specific issue. Outside of that, there really isn't or aren't avenues where an MP can raise specific issues related to their constituencies. And I think,
which is so strange to me hearing this now, because
mm-hmm.
you say representative, this is the person who has been chosen,
yes.
by the people, people to represent them. So what time or where do they get to have motions like
most
this?
Most often, right in parliament, you may see a minister and you may probably give them a letter from your constituency office.
That's why you would hear many representatives say, well, yes, I went and talked to the minister, but the minister...
Well,
I can't get...
So outside of that, there really isn't a whole lot of avenues for persons. Or you can bring, when there's Private Members' Day, which is usually the last sitting of the month, Private Members' Day could take place from the start of the sitting all the way until, I think, it's like just after 6 p.m., if I'm not mistaken. And that strictly deals with opposition business. But once that is over, the government can bring whatever business they have on the order paper. And so I think there needs to be more opportunities and more avenues for members of parliament who are in the opposition to be able to channel some of their concerns on the parliament floor itself.
Because
mm-hmm. outside of writing, you really don't have a huge voice.
Opportunity to do.
Yeah.
To get
most of the things that you debate are legislation and that kind of thing, bills. which are eventually made law. But outside of that, you don't hear a lot about a specific constituency that Mayaro needs this or Togo Sangri Grandi needs this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then you would hear representatives, I mean, we've heard so many times with callers calling in and saying, this particular entity not coming and bringing, my roads need fixing,
yes.
Water, I can't get water, electricity, you know, and you see the protests happening across the country, and then you wonder, well, where's the parliamentary representative?
Correct.
Where's the councillor? And now hearing this, you understand that they may very well be championing for their people, but still don't have a specific time allotted to them to give that voice, as you say, on the parliamentary floor.
Yes, outside of matters on the adjournment, or motions on the adjournment of the House, or motion to move the adjournment of the House, to now discuss that particular business item, there really isn't, you know, an avenue to speak other than writing.
Now, a thought crossed my mind. The purpose of the Central Statistical Office in going to the different, like rural areas, for example, and getting the statistics as to what is necessary or what is needed, how important or what role can the Central Statistical Office play? Or is there a greater role that they can play in bringing, you know, solutions to the parliament?
Of course, the CSO can play a greater role, because one, the CSO gives us stats, and stats are what we need to develop our budget.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a more efficiently functioning statistical body, then you can now have a budget that's more geared towards the people and needs of specific constituencies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the process of budgeting in Trinidad and Tobago is made up of these things where they do, I forget the specific name of it, but essentially you have to like write the things that you need and how much it may cost, and then you send it up to the ministry, and that is sent to the Ministry of Finance and the Ministry of Planning, and they kind of come together and they say, okay, we could spare money here, we could spare money there, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a properly and efficiently functioning Central Statistical Office, you would now be able to have a budget that responds directly to the needs of specific people or specific constituencies.
Mm-hmm. And projects so, that make sense.
Yes, that actually makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you would know where you need to spend the money, which areas you need to spend the money in. And so for the last couple of years, there has been the National Statistical Institute Bill laid in Parliament before Joint Select Committee, but obviously needs the support of the entire government to be able to do what it would be, what it could do in the fullest instance, because kind of amends the Constitution to an extent. It infringes upon the rights, essentially. And so you've had that, but it hasn't been able to get the strength that it needs, the teeth, because the opposition then did not support it in
its full
sum. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We've got some of the calls coming in. 625-2257, 627-3223, 7 minutes to 10 o'clock. Let's take another call. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Tasta.
Good morning.
You know, the gentleman speaks absolutely correctly. But I think our government system could work. And it's not such a terrible system. I think it's the machinery that is comprised of the people that's supposed to execute what's written on paper to make it a reality. I think that's where it's flawed. See, we have village councils. And village councils is comprised of very corrupted people who are connected to somehow something illegal, like either their own business interests or their own agenda. And so when they are in village council, they're only going to seek out their own interests, not the interests of the whole village. And from village council, you have regional corporations. Regional corporations have meetings every month. And it's supposed to be open where villagers come in and voice their concern about the water, traffic, potholes, pavements, and you go to regional corporations and you let them know all the problems that exist in your community, even delivery of mail. And what happens in regional corporation is that's also corrupted, because they all slam their hands on the desk when you make a comment, and then it just goes away. Nothing happens. They don't take your concerns to the minister, so it goes to parliament. There's a protocol to follow. It's a ladder. Because if parliament members, MPs cannot just come and directly supervise our village, that's micromanaging. That's why we have all these levels of protocol to follow. But none of it's followed. And so when you go to a regional corporation, you voice your concern, it falls on deaf ears. And when you go to village council, it falls on corrupt ears. And when you go to business association in your local community, and I'll use maybe the Canopia Business Association. We don't have one in Madras Road, and I'm hoping to form one soon. But those business associations are supposed to help you start your business, help you get incorporated, help you provide signage. And that funding should come from the chambers, because the chambers get a lot of money too. And if the chambers, the business chambers in Port of Spain supervise all those other businesses, we would have a good vein, an artery feeding all the veins in the country, where we have a good circulation of money and resources and people lifting themselves out of poverty. And that impacts trade and also other businesses, because we have farmers here who need help, but they cannot get a license. They don't know how to follow the procedures, and nobody's helping them.
Thank you so much for your call. 625-2257, 627-3223. Now, all that she brought up is just, I guess, like lack of information, really, on the individual's parts as to who to really address their issues to.
Yes.
And I really believe it's more dissemination of knowledge and stop gatekeeping.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you can go to NETCO to actually get some of those things done. Yeah.
And finding mentors as well. And this is a question that I like to ask many of my guests. If it is that you're willing to mentor individuals on how to get through that process of building a business, how do you network? How do you get into those systems that would propel your business forward rather than hold it back? I know that there are systems that need to be updated, but to say that things are not being done is a bit disingenuous at the same time.
Yeah, because there are workshops and stuff that NETCO, which is the National Entrepreneurship Development Company of Trinidad and Tobago, that they host.
Mm-hmm.
And so those things allow you, it gives you, they have stuff ranging from all the way from registration all the way up to accounting, marketing, and all the different things. So I think the caller could probably look at NETCO, but at the end of the day, as you said, it's lack of information in some instances, and the information actually being flowing to the end user.
Let's take another call. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Tesca.
Good morning, Miss Arima. Mr. Pascal says, I know this voice.
Oh, yes. From way back when.
Correct.
You see, this station, since inception, I am been calling. So people who are not callers, who are listeners, they will know this pitch up voice. I want to respond to your last caller. Just can you remember I told you I was the president of the village council,
yes,
president of the self-help, president of the PTA in the area, and a member of the PTA in the primary school, and a worker in my community from the time I stepped foot in Arima, because I was unemployed. And when it is you want to mow the village council, all you have to do, go and join the village council, participate in it. And when it is you go and join the village council, president and chairman, when they see its need, they will invite the councillors, they will invite the MP, and they will write letters to different areas where we need help. It's a lot of work, but you can't just sit down and not part of the village council, the community group, the sports group, nothing at all, and want to come and mow the people.
And complain. A very valid point. If it is that you're not active in your community, I guess, and it's one of the messages that have been sent during this election as well. If it is you haven't casted your vote, then you really have a place to complain,
yes,
you know, or have a comment. Let's switch hours. I want to keep you for an hour, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah? All right, so TNT.
Okay, then.
Yeah, we'll be right
have
back.
Have a blessed day.
Same to you. TNT, thanks so much for your contributions. But here, let's switch hours, and we'll continue to talk about constitutional reform and things that are necessary to develop TNT. We'll be right back.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Welcome to the second hour of today's edition of The Human Impact on Freedom 106.5 FM. In studio with me, I have Mr. Kemuel Pascal, who is a former youth parliamentarian and is holding his own very strongly here inside Freedom 106.5 FM as we continue to talk about constitutional reform and the perspective of the youth. And we've brought up a few topics well within this conversation. We went as far as to finding out what are some of the challenges to constitutional reform. Why is there such a resistance to that? Political influence on decisions of major positions. We touched on the Commissioner of Police, the Senate President, the House Speaker as well. All of these positions that are supposed to be chosen bipartisanly, but yes, somehow seem to have an influence somewhere here and there. The Westminster way of doing things, why we still adhere to the Privy Council and not the Caribbean Court of Justice, even made joke that we have to get a visa to go to find out what the judgment would be, you know. And in discussing that, we talked about the right to recall, limit on terms for representation, representatives, campaign financing, the idea of having mandatory town hall meetings every, like, bi-monthly, quarter, yeah, yeah, that kind of thing. All of those things to put in that I guess we could do for constitutional reform. And I have some calls coming in as well. One person says here at 3061065, Tusker, keep him for the next hour. Very good program. You know, because we're talking about things that does affect the running of the country
on a day-to-day
basis. Yes. And seeing as so many other things are happening internationally that may just blow past us because we're so inward looking, mm-hmm, that at the end of it, we will feel the repercussions because we feel like we're not ready to deal with those international things. And one of them being tariffs.
Yes.
As our big brother, as we like to call him, America, has this little tit for tat going
with
China.
Yes.
You know, and that affects our manufacturing sector here in TNT. From the youth perspective, how do you see us managing that situation as well?
Well, obviously the ones who are directly charged with managing that are the ministers and the technocrats within the specific ministries.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, when you look at trade, obviously you have the Ministry of Trade, well, the now Ministry of Trade, Investment and Tourism. And you also have the Ministry of Foreign and CARICOM Affairs and also the Minister of Finance, because he controls the money. He plays a big role.
He controls any purse.
And so it's diplomacy is needed when you look at these issues. When it was first introduced, I think could have been early last month when Trump would have done what he needed to do, we would have been hit with a 10% tariff, which was his base.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, that has now been put on pause for all countries. And I saw that they were discussing pausing it with China as well for a 90-day period. But I think it's important, the people who we have representing us and the discussions that they have. And so it cannot just be that you as the person speaking directly to the technocrats in the US,
mm-hmm,
kind of need to take into consideration what the people in Trinidad and Tobago are saying and how it would affect us in the long run. Because remember, you're not just speaking about short-term impact. You're speaking about long-term impact.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at the cost of shipping and all of that, us exporting our stuff to the US brings in some sort of foreign revenue, but also is taking away foreign revenue at the same time. So I think I was looking closely at this new incoming administration to see who they would put in those key ministries, and I think they've chosen a brilliant person in the Ministry of Trade.
Yes,
Trade, Investment and Tourism.
And I was about to say that too, for someone who has the experience of building a business from the ground up,
yes,
and understanding how they look at markets, trends, etc.,
yes,
I think he has the perfect knowledge.
Yes, the skill set.
The skill set to really get trade going once again. In terms of, there was one point that I forgot to mention. Someone mentioned when we first did our constitution,
mm-hmm,
the one man power, one vote kind of power situation.
Right.
I think at that time, I did not think they expected Trinidad and Tobago to be such a force within the Caribbean.
Yes.
So the idea of having one person to decide everything made a lot of sense back then,
yes.
So how do we translate that now to adapt to changing times, but still give or hone into our identity as Trinidad and Tobago?
So it's important. It's I like how you phrase the question in terms of saying our identity as Trinidad and Tobago, because in the Constitutional Reform Committee that was set up last year by Dr. Rowley, that particular committee suggested, as one of the words, proposed rather, that we redo the preamble of the Constitution to look more at, one, where we came from as a country and where we are going forward, recognizing our history, basically, and where we are to go as a people. And so it's important that we recognize that in terms of going forward. But what I really want to say in terms of the Constitution, remember, a lot of what we inherited is saved into our Constitution. And so what would have worked for us back then doesn't necessarily work for us right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important that we understand that the law has spirit and it has life, and the law is a moving and living thing. And so we must allow our laws to keep a pace with what's happening in within our region, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And also, we have to take into consideration the region, because we are part of CARICOM.
Yes.
And the positioning of CARICOM in terms of trade and industry and coming together, we are a force, yes, but we also have our individual situations to attend to. How do we keep that identity and still build with CARICOM?
I think we as a people here in Trinidad, we know exactly who we are. Mm-hmm. Yes, sometimes our perception might be a little skewed, if I might put it like that. But at the same time, we do know who we are, and we do know our potential.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's important, I think, for governments, because they really have the power, to governments that are elected here in Trinidad, we go to ensure that the people remain aware of the identity and not stray too much away from. As much as we are influenced heavily by the US and the UK and other countries, it's important that we keep our identity and not try too much to pattern ourselves after them, because those are the countries that we go to most. The US is our largest trading partner.
Yeah.
Most of our clothing, almost everything, the food we eat.
So then, how does Jamaica do it then? Because you could go to the United States and tell a Jamaican, because they are rooted in who they are.
Yes.
You know, you could, I mean, just the accent alone. I mean, you could tell a Trini too.
Yeah.
But there's something about Jamaica. And I mean, it's more of a feeling than anything else. How come we, I don't know, we now catching up to it, you know,
I
in
think
some
sometimes,
respects.
As much as we do know our identity, we sometimes try to pattern ourselves because we're trying to fit in.
Mm.
Yeah, it's that kind of, we feel that Trinidad and Tobago, we are a little inferior, but that's not the case. We can't allow ourselves to just want to fit in always. We need to stand out and be bold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And start picking up the Yankee accent after 2 weeks. Stay in there for 2 weeks and you come back. Yeah, go on. What's up? Let's take some phone calls. 625-2257. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Ms. Martinez, and good morning to Mr. Pastor.
Good morning.
Tusker, one of the biggest problems and challenges that we have with getting things done is the issue of tokenism. Once you have political leaders of a political party who have the sole responsibility to choose who they want, and they can select anybody, any neophyte, that person is going to be beholden to them. So that's why you cannot get constitutional change, because while you need the majority in parliament, you have to toe the party line. And if you don't toe the party line, you'll be thrown in the political cemetery. And Mr. Pascal should very well know, well aware of that.
Yes.
And of course, we see a number of persons labeled as dissidents, or whatever they are called.
Mm-hmm.
I want to point out to you something. If you look at the GOP, and those who don't know the GOP is the Republicans, when Donald Trump brought about that tariff, they took that to Congress. And at least four members of the GOP voted against what Trump was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be no sort of ramifications for these individuals. Now, take that into Trinidad and Tobago, where you had Mr. Ragbir then voting on a piece of bill. He was labeled as a traitor. So how are you going to get constitutional reform when there's no maturity from the individuals who you are elected, who have to toe a party line? And that is one of the biggest challenges that we have. So we can talk from here till the cow come home. As long as we don't have no political maturity, constitutional reform will just be talk shop. I will continue now. If you look at local government, every single month, when they're at a meeting, the burgesses are supposed to be present at the respective corporations, listening to the plans or to what have been done. It is already in the act. So Mr. Parker is saying that there needs to be meetings every 2 to 3 months. The act is already there. I guess it's the will of the people to be able to be present at these corporations meetings.
Commitment.
And all the people who they elect to having such. And that is the problem. There's a lot of disconnect with terms of persons wanting to be involved, and then there's the holding back of information, keeping that away from you, not trying to be involved, to be critiquing one or to be as an oversight body, which can inevitably reduce corrupt practices, because you will be able to see what is going to be done. You can object to it, especially with the procurement legislation now. You can see what civil society can see what is going to be done. You can object to this project or that project. And the issue of getting things done in Trinidad and Tobago, especially for MPs, the biggest challenge come back to is funding. It comes back to the availability of funds. If I don't have funds to do a project, how am I going to execute it? Am I going to be begging the corporate society to help me? I think not. So that is something that people have to understand. And you see, the respective parties have to be truthful to the population and tell them the amount of funds that are available to get things done. We cannot do it now, but we can put it as a projection to do it in the next financial year. And that is something that the populace will more than likely acquiesce to reluctantly, because they know more than likely it's going to be done. But when there's no feedback on it, of course, it just everything's fall long. And that's a major issue that we have in Trinidad and Tobago. Mm-hmm. Before I go, Tusker and Mr. Pascal, when you talk about youth involvement in terms of all these youth debates, you have a number of things that youths get involved, a number of our ideas that go forward to bring about change. One of the challenges that it has in terms of implementing those changes is the person who very say that we're giving room for youths. So the person who's saying youth should get more involved, but they are stifling when you object to certain things.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, they see it as a threat in terms of flowing and income flowing into pockets that more than likely are beholden to them. And that is the big, big problem in terms of getting things done. Lastly, the issue of principle. If you look at our constitution and the construct of our constitution, you look at New Zealand. He said he went to New Zealand. New Zealand is one of those countries that are free state. If something is done and it there's a conflict of interest on that individual, and it shows up more than once, that person is going to resign. Mm-hmm. In Trinidad and Tobago, the very same, almost a replica, that person is going to hold on to power or unless the directory fires them. And that is the issue, and that is another thing.
Well, this is why we're asking about limited terms and limited time for representatives. That is why
political.
And you can't have consecutive. Yeah. So is it that you're thinking that putting these things into black and white will like make
exactly.
them get all in their feelings?
Yes, the thing will be easy for you to access, easy for you to track, to see exactly what is going to be done. And if you put that in black and white, it will be easy to track. Remember, it will be online, it will be accessible to everybody. And that is, you don't want to have that. You don't want to educate the populace. What do you want to? Especially when you have the procurement regulator telling you $5 billion in corrupt practices ever so often.
Thanks so much for your call. Yep. And it all goes back to one of the first things that you said earlier on today, political will.
Yes.
And it alludes to character, integrity, accountability, all of
correct.
These things that we request of our representatives, and yet still, in some cases, I think a little afraid to demand, because the fallout just might be total change that maybe we may not be ready for.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, systems that work for people, they are a bit reluctant to touch them.
Mm-hmm.
So if the appointment of a speaker in a partisan manner works for that particular ruling party, they would not want to touch it. Because I remember last year, that same constitutional reform committee that was set up, they recommended two-term limits, and at an event that the PNM hosted last year, Dr. Rowley said that they disagree with that. So it's there in the public. You could go on YouTube and look at it. Mm-hmm. That was at their special convention in August last year, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are not there. They don't want to touch systems that work in their favor. If I could be there for 20 years, 25 years, 40 years, for instance, and the system works in my favor because somebody else doesn't, because I don't want to give somebody else a chance. I'm mm-hmm. enjoying the perks of the office and whatever. Why am I going to touch the system?
I mean, you've seen examples of it around the world too. Eh? I could think of Mugabe. I could think mm-hmm. of, I'm seeing his face, Kim Jong-un, and all of these different, you call them leaders.
Putin.
Many would say
yes.
Dictators. Yes. And yet still, in some instances, you see where some systems work for them, and then you see systems that work against and does not do well for the population and their resources. And could we say that it boils down to resources and who has control of those resources, natural and otherwise?
Not just resources. It's simply that if you have power and you could be biased towards your constituency, then that's what people do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why you see some constituencies are underdeveloped, simply because if the ruling party is not there, that constituency isn't going to receive the amount of attention that that the other constituencies receive. Or mm-hmm. if you don't have high profile people living in those constituencies, you're not just not going to get attention. The issues that Toko Sangirandi, Moruga Table and Mayaro that they face,
mm-hmm.
the places like areas in when you look at places like Togo Martin Northeast, for instance, they don't always face those issues. They might have similar issues, but to the extent that those rural constituencies face them, not here in the West, and you know.
Yeah. How do you put it? Out of sight, out of mind.
Yes, kind
of.
Out of sight, out of mind, yeah.
But at the end of the day, Trinidad and Tobago's population is slowly waking up to the realization for the development and continued development of TNT, something needs to change.
A little too slow.
Well, the change is coming, but it's coming. A little too slow. All right, TNT, I want to thank you so much for joining this conversation.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability, the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.